Hello, I'm Leslie Garfield-Tenzer, and this is Legal Tenzer, casual conversations on newsworthy legal topics. The civil rights movement and the climate movement were populated by different generations. In contrast with the baby boomers and the former, the millennials and the Generation Z are the galvanizing media-grabbing activists for the climate movement. These generations have grown up in very different time periods, with the digital age affecting the younger generation. Today, my guest, Professor Robin Boyle-Lazier, is here to talk about her chapter, Generational Comparisons of the Civil Rights Movement with the Current Day Climate Movement, which will be included in the forthcoming book, Generations in American Politics. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for including me.
So let's first talk about just this idea of comparing. What is the comparison between the civil rights movement and people engaged in the climate movement?
So my idea was to compare these two movements because they both started at about the same time, many decades ago, but they took very different paths and they are at different places today. And they were also populated by different generations. The book, Generations in American Politics, seeks to compare and to characterize generations. And I thought this was an interesting comparison and contrast between those who populated the 1960s and civil rights movement in contrast with today's climate movement, which has younger generation, and they're very different. And the way in which they've organized, the way in which they've interacted, the support from the wider groups of networks has been very different.
You know, it's interesting because I see your point, and I think about when I was younger and the civil rights leaders who really kind of moved the country forward are now kind of civil rights statesmen or maybe have even passed away. And, you know, I remember, and I think, you know, we talked about this, that when we were kids, there was this kind of Schoolhouse Rock that taught you not to litter. And, you know, and people started talking about climate movement at the same time, but we don't have climate movement elder statesmen or statespersons, I should say, in the same way that we have elder persons in the civil rights movement. So I don't know why that is.
That's a really interesting point. And I think that bears reflection because it illustrates some of the points in my chapter, which is that the climate movement hasn't been in the forefront in terms of that older statesman perspective, as you point out. What we're seeing are the people who are grabbing the headlines are our Gen Zers and our millennials, which are, it's wonderful that we see youth who are so involved and care about our future. But they're organizing in a different way with different strategies. And so what we saw from the civil rights movement were those elder statespersons, right, who grabbed the headlines, but they also took the time to build communities and build networks and go from community to community, group to group, church to church, to pass out pamphlets, talk about the importance. They engaged the legislature, they engaged different aspects of America. Whereas in the climate movement, we're not seeing those deep roots. And also what's characterizing the climate movement is the digital age. And so I emphasize this in my chapter, which is when we are organizing something in a matter of days using our cell phones, that although it makes an impact and we get people there, it's not building the deeper roots of community building, which we saw in the civil rights movement.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think the climate movement has not built those kind of roots that you're talking about?
I think it's two things. First, I think Americans have not seen the crisis. Our eyes have been closed to what environmentalists have been telling us. And this goes back for decades. Mm-hmm. And it's taking the youth who really have a very strong stake in the outcome, as I described in the chapter, because they're going to have to live with the lessons of the climate movement longer than the older folks. Mm-hmm. They'll be on the planet longer.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the ones who are taking the charge.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas in the civil rights movement, I think it was far more violent, even though there was a desire to have peaceful protests.
Mm-hmm.
It was met with violence and it was explosive.
Mm-hmm.
Things had to change and they had to change immediately. And I think we all felt the immediacy of it, the need for things to change. Whereas with the climate movement, we haven't felt the immediacy, although we should. Maybe it's sort of a sleeper immediacy. In other words, the icebergs are melting, but we don't see them. They're not affecting us in the morning when we go to school.
Oh, I just saw one. I was just in Canada and I saw an iceberg and it is going to melt in 30 years and there's going to be no water. And it completely flipped me out. But it flipped me out enough to make even more changes than the changes I'm making right now to accommodate climate change. But you're absolutely right about this idea that the civil rights movement, I mean, enough was enough in the 60s. And we're still not there, obviously. But, you know, there is not that. And I do feel that with climate change, to your point, people say we can pass it on to the next generation. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, right? Like that, which makes sense that the leaders now are kind of the people who are growing up. They're the next generation.
They're the next generation. And my chapter points out that those who usually put a lot of activism into a movement are ones who have the greater stake in the outcome, which makes sense. They feel it in their hearts and they're out on the street. And that makes sense. What we're seeing, the ones who are on the street right now with the climate movement are the younger generations. And then in addition, sort of the sleepy, but not sleepy, but quiet giants are the big green groups. So the large nonprofits that have been promoting conservatism and who have been making legislative inroads, those are grabbing fewer headlines. They're doing good work. It's just not as apparent, I think, to your everyday American.
So what do you think the lessons to be learned by this green movement from the civil rights movement? In other words, what can they learn?
I think what they can learn is to go back to sort of the old-fashioned way of political organizing, which is start talking to groups, start talking to people, go to churches, go to where whoever invites you and have a dialogue, start building connections. It was through dialogue on campuses that a lot of these movements sprouted up in the 60s, the teach-ins and the sit-ins and the support for the Black Panthers who were being arrested. All of this and the anti-war movement and the women's movement, gay rights movement, all of this came about through dialogue, through contemplation, through reading groups and panels and having a march with speakers and music, musicians. That really all culminated in the 60s. And we're not seeing this in a very important movement, the climate movement, because we're perhaps too easily swayed by the digital era, which can so easily pull together a march, but it's not getting to people's minds the way or to the connections or to the networks that were established before.
That's an interesting concept too, that in order to build a movement in the 1960s, people had to be in the room, right?
Yes.
They'd be in the same room to communicate with each other. I mean, even phones, you could only talk to one person, right? You couldn't conference in people. But that same thing is not true today, that people don't have to be in the same room. You know, we are speaking to each other via Zoom. Do you think Zoom rooms can accomplish that goal?
To some extent, but not totally. So for instance, I was at a bar association event the other night, and everybody was saying, how much better it was to shake hands in person, to exchange business cards, to have a conversation one-on-one. Whereas on Zoom, when we met for the past 2 years at a panel, we didn't get to have those side conversations. And those side conversations are very important because we're inviting each other to the next event. Right. And we're talking about our next event. And right. As a professor, I'm discussing my students and their accomplishments, and I'm able to brag about my students, but I'm not able to do that on Zoom at a panel, you know, one-on-one.
Right.
So right. Yes, Zoom gets us, in other words, we didn't have to pay for the airline ticket to get to the conference in California. That's a huge step. And yes, we saw a lot of spike up in numbers for events that I've organized by Zoom. But what we're lacking is what happens after that, the aftermath. And so it's kind of a splash without a deeper dive. So what we've lost is that connection that happens, you know, milling around during the breaks.
So that's a little ironic, right? So technology is actually working against climate change in certain ways.
It is, right? Yes.
Which, and by the way, just changing it to climate change was enough to work against climate change. You know, it's all, you know, I think that is, you know, it used to be called basically, you know, a crisis, and now they change it to just a change. So anyway, so anything, what else about your chapter have we not touched on?
Well, I think when it gets into print, and it's been a bit delayed because of the pandemic, but when it's posted and people can read it, I think people will enjoy the details about what I really enjoyed writing about were movement details, mm-hmm. about how movements got formed and their strategies and the nonviolent aspect of the goals. And I really enjoyed writing it from a historical perspective. And also I was able to reminisce and get a good feel for the 60s. And that felt really good. And I hope it comes through in the writing.
Yeah, it was a great read. I really enjoyed it very much. And it's interesting, the 60s had a lot of good, but I think it's one of the decades that's labeled with turmoil too, whereas the 50s were kind of very calm and complacent. You know, as you're speaking, I'm thinking about this idea of the civil rights movement. It was born probably in the late 50s. We had the civil rights movement in 1964. Again, we still have a long way to go, but they did make great strides in a short amount of time. Is there a time you can pinpoint back to when kind of the environmental movement began?
So it's interesting, in the research that I saw, there wasn't a triggering event. Like with the civil rights movement, people point to Rosa Parks mm-hmm. not giving up her seat on the bus. There are different triggering events, different marches and things that they will trigger. However, with this climate movement, no. And although people will look more recently to some of the recent marches and Greta Thunberg coming over by sailboat, for instance, mm-hmm. and testifying before Congress, but there aren't those special moments in mm-hmm. history that I think we can point to with the climate movement.
Yeah. So, you know, we think about, I think about this idea that part of Al Gore's platform when he ran for president in 2000 was, a major part of his platform was the environment. And that's 20 years ago. And I still don't think there's been a loud enough call to arms for it. So
I agree. And there should be.
Yeah. Did writing this chapter make you more concerned about the lack of advancement for either movement, or did you have any feel for the success or lack thereof for either of these movements?
So in current day, we talk a lot in the universities about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And in that sense, we're all aware that there's a lot farther to go with there were strides with the civil rights movement, I think major accomplishments that we should continue to feel confident about, but there's a lot more work to be done, and we're really sitting on edge about what the U.S. Supreme Court is going to do with affirmative action. With the current day climate movement, interesting, there's work to be done in terms of also recognizing persons of color within the movement. There has been some backlash against the press for press that appeared that focused mostly on white activists as opposed to activists of color. And it's interesting, but there's still improvement that's needed with the climate movement and how the movement itself is interacting and interacting with the press. So there are lessons that the current day climate movement can learn from the civil rights movement, which includes not only face-to-face organizing, more people contact, but also recognizing the leadership that's there. And both movements are extremely important and still have more work to do.
Right. I agree. What similarities, you know, we're talking about the differences. What similarities did you see between the two?
But the similarities are that those who fuel each movement are ones with stake in the outcome. Those who felt, so for instance, with the civil rights movement, we saw college students of color who saw that their job opportunities were quite limited, who got very involved at that time. So persons of color, particularly Black Americans, involved in the civil rights movement. With the current climate movement, we also see, as I pointed out, the younger generation, because they feel the stake in the outcome. The other similarities are the nonviolent tactics. And the civil rights movement emphasized nonviolence. I also see those tactics in the current day climate movement with their activism. And that's encouraging because we want nonviolence in our country. There's too much violence in our country. Those are probably the stake in the outcome and the nonviolent tactics are probably the two biggest common themes that I saw.
That makes sense.
The other is, the third I would point to is the use of our political system. So eventually the civil rights movement tapped into the legislation. We saw the passage of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. We also saw the US Supreme Court decisions. The climate movement also has been working bills through Congress and on the state level for quite some time. So the 1960s movement switched over from more protest-oriented to more let's work within the system to change the system. And I see that also with the current day climate movement. In some ways, it's always tried to work within the system as opposed to opposing the system. So it's always been more, let's work within the mechanisms that we have with our government in order to change.
So interesting. It really, I guess lessons learned. Are there lessons that the climate movement can learn from the civil rights movement?
I think so. I think the importance of what I call building a network. There's nothing like the 60s movement did not happen because the legislators woke up and said, I have to do this.
Right.
There was pressure from their constituency, pressure from the white community as well as the Black community. And it's about the importance of building networks. And networks have to run through the different strata of society, different people with different color, different socioeconomic groups. It has to run all through society in order to really get a buy-in and to make a change.
And networks comes back to your idea that people need to be in the room, which is what was so effective for the civil rights movement. So interesting. Anything else you want to add for our listeners?
I hope they read the chapter.
I hope they read the chapter and I hope they read a book. Yes. I'm excited for it to come out. The chapter again is called Generational Comparison of the Civil Rights Movement and the Current Day Climate Movement. And it's going to be included in the book Generations in American Politics, which we're going to look for when it comes out. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
Thank you.
So there you have it. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, or a professor or attorney with whom you'd like me to speak, send us an email at legaltensor@westacademic.com and send us any suggestions you may have. We love getting feedback. Have a great day.